Blog Talk Radio.
Arizona in 2 weeks' time, 13 days until we get to see the Seahawks and the Patriots. We'll talk more about that with Kyle Brennan in a minute. I don't want to talk about teeth. I don't know what happened to Tiger's tooth. The bottom line is Lindsey Vonn set the record, and it's not Tiger's back. And as long as he doesn't pull a Rory McIlroy, I don't think we'll have an issue come his first tee shot, Phoenix Open, next week. So I'm going to try to avoid talking about Tiger's tooth because teeth is a subject I don't think radio listeners really want to hear. What I would prefer to talk about in the game of golf is what Jimmy Walker did. Jimmy Walker owned Hawaii 62-63 on the weekend. One putted his last, 11 greens, I think it was, guys, on Saturday. Goes in there yesterday. Has another stellar back nine, birdieing 15, 16, 18. Just looks steady. He was bogey-free on Sunday. Just really top-notch stuff. I think you got to give credit where credit's due in that he bounced back from last Monday. We were on the air this time, and he was cruising, and we get off the air, and Patrick Reed's taking it into a playoff with Jimmy Walker not long after we get off the air. So I think you have to give credit where credit's due to Jimmy Walker. He bounced back hard this week. Had a good talk with his dad that helped set him up for this week, and it paid off in another win for him and another showing of how deep and strong the U.S. male contingent is right now in golf. The U.S. female contingent is pretty good themselves, with Michelle Wee and Stacey Lewis, the first two being off on that list. But just really, really strong stuff, and you got to give credit where credit's due to Jimmy Walker for bouncing back the way he did, because he could have crunkled up in the ball and not, you know, played well this week. He was the defending champion. But when you lose like that, and you get basically won over by Patrick Reed, who, as we know, has a tendency to go low, and we know has a tendency to really surge when he wants, you can get in situations where you can be quickly overtaken. And that's what happened to Jimmy. He struggled, missed that putt at 14, did not make the shots down the stretch that he needed to last week. But credit to him, he bounces back and just puts on a stellar, stellar display of golf and really owned these last couple rounds. So kudos to him on that one. He did what he had to do, and that's the bottom line there when it comes to Jimmy Walker. We are going to be joined by Kyle Brennan, preview this matchup, talk some other stuff as we roll along. Interesting thing about the Patriots being in this Super Bowl is that I'm going to know some people going to the Super Bowl. So the Super Bowl, or hopefully going to the Super Bowl, I don't want to jinx it for them. If it's true, we will have a special edition of the Sunday Sprint on Super Bowl Sunday where we will go from the preview with Luke Morrow into talking to these guys from Arizona. We did this back in the Giants Super Bowl when I hosted a show on QAQ, WQAQ that day when the Giants were there the first time. And we'll try to do something like that again, get the vibe from Phoenix. So that's coming up Then we will be back in 30 seconds. No, we're not going to be back in 30 seconds. Let's just do it right now. Kyle's a busy working man, and I don't want to take Kyle away from his work by having Bob Costa say, donate to ALS, because we play it every week, and it's a great cause, so you should all donate to ALS. We welcome the unbiased sports writer. I like that, Kyle. The unbiased sports writer with the Republican American newspaper in Beacon Falls, Connecticut. Hello, Kyle.
Well, we're a small town in Beacon Falls, but we don't have our own newspaper. It's in Waterbury, Connecticut, but that's close enough, and I am unbiased.
Well, that's good. I'm glad that you are unbiased. You know, your Twitter cover photo is you looking at X's and O's of a football team, and this is something that I meant to ask you previously, and I never have. Are you one of those guys that, by covering football, has a greater understanding of the X's and O's for it?
I think when you do understand what's going on the field, that you usually get a better sort of angle for what you're writing on a day-to-day basis. I mean, being a beat writer and not understanding what's going on the field is, you know, it's kind of a shallow look. So, you know, it's better to know what's going on. It's good to know X's and O's because I also do play-by-play when I'm, when I'm out covering a game. Instead of just standing on the sideline with a notepad, I'm doing play-by-play on the radio. So, you know, you know X's and O's. It makes for a better broadcast. And also, you know, I think it gives a little bit more respect in the eyes of some coaches who say, all right, you know, he kind of knows what's happening here. So, we can take it to a different level, or they kind of, can see eye to eye with you a little bit.
When Bill Belichick shocked the football world with that formation 2 weeks ago, when Shane remade himself an ineligible receiver versus eligible, had you seen that before? Is that something that has cropped up in Connecticut high school football?
I can't say I've seen a player make himself ineligible, but we do have a team in my neck of the woods in Naugatuck, Connecticut, that likes to run some strange formations. He calls it the polecat formation, which is basically, you shift the weight of your linemen, to the field side, all the way to the other sideline. So, you know, sometimes he'll just run with one center. Sometimes he'll run with a center and two. For lack of a better term, they end up being tackled, but they're lined up as guards. I just think a lot of people out there are just used to thinking, all right, you've got to have, the five men up front at a tight end, put a wide receiver on the line, but, that's obviously not right. The rule is in the formations, you've got to have seven men on the line of scrimmage, four in the backfield. There's no two ways about it. And, that's one of the things that, doing a broadcast for a game that, you've got a coach who likes to run trick plays and run trick formations. You've got to at least know the basics of if they have seven men on the line of scrimmage, it's going to be a legal formation. And then you go to understanding if a guy's lined up, to the outside, if he's the last man on the line of scrimmage, then he's automatically eligible. So, there's little quirks to it that the casual viewer might not think about, but, in terms of making someone ineligible, that one's a little out of left field, so I'll leave it to him.
The reason why I wanted to have you on is that my shows over the next 2 weeks are going to have a lot of play on Seattle and the Patriots from a fan angle. You, being an unbiased sports writer, kind of fall in an interesting territory because Connecticut kind of is at this middle ground, and anybody who has gone to UConn or gone to Quinnipiac or gone to Hartford or gone to Fairfield knows this, kind of on that middle ground between, or Yale for that matter, between Red Sox Nation and all the Patriot fans and then the New York sports teams, which is an interesting dynamic. And you become friends with a lot of people that you would not have become friends with unless you went to school there. This is going to be an interesting 2 weeks, I think, Kyle, because these Patriot fans who have experienced this ecstasy before recently have really felt the agony. And being on that line of demarcation, there's going to be a very fine line between the haters and the ones who really want this title.
Well, first of all, I think hater is the worst word in the dictionary, so I will not be uttering that word, and I resent any sort of discussion about said word. Number two, it was decided by a group of our friends that you just wanted to look for a reason to use the phrase line of demarcation. So just so I have those two things out of the way. My area is, you know, it's always pretty much been right on the cusp, I guess, is right around the 50-50 point of where you get into Boston sort of fans or New York fans. You know, it makes sense because, you know, as Quinnipiac likes to point out, you know, we're only an hour and a half away from Boston and New York City. So, you know, it makes sense that you start running into them like this. For me as a Jets fan and a Red Sox fan, you know, I hate each city's fan base equally. You know, they're full of morons on both sides who are short-sighted and arrogant and, you know, think they know what they're talking about at all times and think they're part of the team, you know, which are all the ingredients for making the worst sports fans. So there you have two of the worst fan bases. You know, I'm kind of crunched up in the middle. You know, I hate to share a team with some of these people sometimes. The bright side is that I don't have to suffer through another Patriots-Giants Super Bowl because that was horrifying 2 years ago or 3 years ago, whenever the hell that was. But, you know, now you just got to deal with Patriots fans who think they're part of the team, and it's just unbearable.
So much there. So much packed into that one answer. First of all, I did not realize that you are a fellow long-suffering Jet fan, so I'm not sure why I never realized that, Kyle, but I never did. So now I know.
And you're not a very observational person, I know.
I somehow missed that one. So we can commiserate over our failures at some point. At some point down the line. The next thing is that I understand not wanting to use the word hater, but what is your view on Shake It Off? Because haters, the concept of haters and this concept of rebelling against those who have held you down has been, you know, these people got an anthem in Shake It Off. What is your view on the song and Taylor Swift's use of hater and the message that Taylor is trying to send in Shake It Off?
Well, as a country music aficionado and fan, I wish Taylor Swift all the best on her future career. However, I do not listen to her music anymore. I've only heard the song in passing. I will say that any country song that uses the word hater in it is automatically blocked from any rotation that I listen to. So, you know, there it is. If you feel the need to even acknowledge the fact that someone allegedly holds one down, then that makes you a pretty weak person as far as I'm concerned.
What was your view of Taylor Swift, the country singer? Because she did revolutionize, and maybe revolutionize is too strong a term, but she was the tentpole of country pop for a long time here, and she did cross genres and was number one on multiple charts.
Yeah, I've got no problem with country crossover type in theory. When it starts becoming garbage, then that's where we like to cut ties with folks like Luke Bryan and Blake Shelton and Florida Georgia Line. You know, Taylor Swift, her first album was excellent. First album with Teardrops on My Guitar and Tim McGraw, great true country songs. And it started evolving, and, you know, musicians evolve. That's the whole thing about those quirky folks. And, you know, all the power to her. I'm just glad she didn't try to claim that this new album was going to be a country album, because Red was definitely not a country album, and I was a little upset by the fact that, you know, it was stealing chart places from people who actually deserved them. But, you know, good for her. I'm glad she seems like a nice gal, and wish you wouldn't write about jilted love so much, but, you know, hey, whatever you got to do to pay the bills, man.
This is interesting because I did not expect this conversation to go this way, but this is a fascinating direction. You mentioned, you know, how much you loved her first album and how disappointed you were that Red was labeled what it was. Is it true that country stations have completely eschewed 1989. Have they just not played it at all?
My understanding is that that is labeled as a pop album. So even though there's a lot of, to be honest, I don't listen to a whole lot of country radio anymore because country radio is pretty bad right now. It plays some terrible songs way too much. It doesn't play good songs nearly enough, you know, unless you're talking about asking or telling a girl to slide over in her pickup truck so that you can go park in the middle of the woods underneath the moon and drink whatever you brought in your mason jar. Then it's not really good enough for country radio at this point in time. So I rarely listen to country radio. It would not surprise me if they didn't play it, just because I'm not sure how much it was issued to them. It was marketed as a pop album, you know, and nobody really made any bones about it. So maybe there was some one-off plays. I don't know if any of them charted just from unsolicited airplay, because there was no singles issued to country. Red was the last one that there was even any trace, and there were a few that stayed up at number one for far too long, you know, because Billboard, they changed around their criteria for number one. They split off in the airplay charts into hot charts, which the hot charts are kind of like the king chart, and they include Spotify. So if you're even considered maybe a little bit of a country artist, and some nerd kids and losers are just sitting on Spotify listening bad music, it's going to just jack the song up to number one, even if it's a piece of garbage. So I don't know where that answer started, but that's where it finished.
Interesting. We're learning stuff about country music today, folks, through Republican American unbiased sports writer Kyle Brennan. Kyle, the last time you were on this show, we were talking fantasy sports and fantasy football. I was helping settle disputes. And this got to the point where in the off-season, last weekend, you guys held a meeting, your off-season meeting, where you looked over the Constitution and amended the Constitution. This is not the United States of America Constitution, which sits next to me on my desk. This is the Fantasy Football Constitution for your league. For the folks out there who are listening to this and going, why the heck do they need a Constitution? Why did you need a Constitution?
Well, first of all, it's a little peculiar that you have the United States Constitution sitting on your desk, but God bless. The need for a Constitution it started arising about midway through the season. We had a day that I think was the genesis for coming on your program, in which we had three trades vetoed within 4 hours. I mean, you know, during the season, I think we had 20 trades past the wire, and you know, there was there became questions. We had one player, you know, veto his own trade in process of colluding with another owner to pull off what he perceived as a better trade. You know, this is a keeper league, so we had to really iron out the keeper rules, and this will be our second upcoming season using keepers. So just a lot of stuff that had to be sort of hammered out, and so we can, you know, make this thing run smoothly for in perpetuity. So I drew up a five-page constitution, you know, totally from scratch, didn't have any basis to work off of there, and it came out very well and had a very productive owners meeting. I think we had 10 of the 11 returning owners. We have a vacancy open that we voted on to invite a 12th owner in the league. So it's a very exciting time for our league, and we're looking forward to another good season, and the need comes up, we have a clause in that constitution for an independent arbiter, and since you did a nice job last time, we would invite you back, I would assume.
Well, thank you. This show is always open for your fantasy football needs and for your fantasy football disputes to be settled on the institution, capital I, that is teeing up with Jeremy Schoen on Blog Talk Radio and the Golf News Net Radio Network. Kyle, one thing that fascinated me about the last 5 years in football is the meteoric rise of the NFL juxtaposed against the recent concussion crisis that has overtaken all of football. And if you look at the stats, youth football participation is down. You cover youth football, basically. I would think that most people would consider high school football part of youth football, correct?
Yeah, I would say if we're talking about a broad discussion, then yes, that would be fair.
Okay. you know, youth football, the participation numbers have fallen. What have you seen? Because this is, you know, there's a lot of parents who are sitting there making that decision, should my son play football?
Yeah, no, the numbers have they've dropped off a bit. You know, we had a school here in Waterbury that a Catholic school that saw its numbers just fall year after year, and by the end of the, not last season, but the 2013 season, their Thanksgiving game, I think they only had 18 players dressed on the sideline. So they ended up having to coordinate a cooperative program by having the tech school in the city join up with them. So, you know, you've got some of that. You know, you just see a whole lot of teams, not all of them, but in a lot of the smaller towns in Connecticut that, you know, you're looking at 35-man rosters, and sometimes that even includes freshmen. So, yeah, the numbers are going down. I think sort of corresponding with that, the quality has gone down a little bit, at least in high school. Don't know if you'll see it, you know, or how long it will take for that to be reflected in college and then maybe in the NFL, whether, you know, sometimes you just, the best athletes, they don't want to play football anymore because, you know, they're thinking about, I don't know if it's as much head injuries. I think that's kind of taken the brunt of it, but there's always been injuries in it. And, you know, now you've got kids, there's more sports than ever. You play youth lacrosse and, you know, youth hockey and, you know, basketball and baseball, they're all year round now. So there's just so many options. Soccer has become big. That's taken away some kids. And, but yeah, the statistics, they're not just thrown out of a hat somewhere with a bunch of 8-year-olds and a small football field. I mean, it's all the way up to high school, and you know, it'll be interesting to see if that ever translates in the lesser quality that I've seen here into the college ranks.
Final thing, as you look in your crystal ball, and you're somebody that covers all sports for the Republican American. Is this lacrosse's moment? Is this volleyball's moment? Is this the moment for some of these sports to, you know, put another way, will we be sitting here in 5 years if the institution that is teeing it up is lucky enough to be here in 5 years and say that one of these other sports has ascended, maybe not to the level of football, but really become mainstream?
I don't know. I think that this whole, sure, football has become a little bit more popular. That's fine. But I think it only looks a lot more popular just because, you know, TV networks have decided, you know what, we're just going to load up on football because people watch it. And now just because there's more offered, there's more people to watch it. So, yeah, game ratings, they might go up a little bit here and there. But I think there's a perception that people just can't get enough football. When I don't know if that's really the case. I mean, I can get enough football. Like, I've got too much. I have felt the need to not watch a whole lot of these playoffs. I watched most of the NFC game yesterday. I watched a little bit of the AFC game. I'm not sure I watched much of either of the first two rounds, to be honest. So I think it's overblown a little bit in saying that this NFL is just the most popular thing of all time, because, you know, I think it's pretty much where it's been. Are there any other sports? I don't think so. Not really. Volleyball is not becoming any more popular, unfortunately for you. I think hockey and soccer are the next two that sort of get a little bit more. But I think to some degree there's just a ceiling there, and you know, the NFL is happy to be, I guess, where it is.
QU hockey had the issue Friday night of being caught in a fire alarm and the game having to be suspended. Many good fire alarm, you know, games having to be stopped for power outages or fire alarms or any odd reasons?
You know, Corey Hirsch and I, we did a broadcast back on Thanksgiving weekend of, I guess it was 2010, where the Quinnipiac women were hosting the Nutmeg Classic and the power went out. They dimmed the lights of the national anthem, and the lights never came back on. So we had to fill about 15 or 20 minutes of airtime as I was talking about the history of the nutmeg trade in Connecticut. That's one. I had a high school football game around here. It got delayed. It had to be suspended one night because a light tower went out. Those are, I guess, two of the bigger ones. I don't remember any fire alarms, but I guess that wasn't the first time it's happened at Merrimack, so. They need to figure it out up there.
That had to be weird. All right, let's play football, folks. Whoops, we can't see anymore. That had to be weird.
Yeah, it was a short night.
Yeah, short night and then a longer day upon the resumption. Kyle Brennan, the one, the only, the unbiased sports writer from the Republican American newspaper and the guy who runs a fantasy football league that has an actual constitution. By the way, will this constitution now have a preamble? Because every good constitution has to have a good preamble.
Well, we don't see the need to handcuff ourselves with the preamble. It was ratified as proposed, and I believe you were on the league mailing list that got both the copy of the Constitution and the meeting minutes. So, you know, that's something that perhaps one of our members will propose to amend at our next owners' meeting, a preamble, but as of now, no current plans to put in a preamble.
And also, I noticed that your meeting started with the Pledge of Allegiance but did not include the anthem. Was there a reason for not including the anthem?
No, just time restrictions. We also had the anthem at the hockey game that we went to beforehand, so we covered all our bases throughout the day.
Kyle Brennan, thank you, sir.
Always a pleasure, Jer.
We will see you next week, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific, for another edition of Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schilling. You can see these episodes anytime online, blogtalkradio.com/Jeremy3162, and also by going and by listening to the Golf News Net Radio Network. Have fun. Have a great night, and hopefully none of you lose a tooth or teeth through odd reasoning that can't really be explained. We will see you next week. Enjoy.